It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
To every family across our nation, the First Lady and I want to wish you all a very, very Merry Christmas. For Christians, this is a joyous time to remember God's greatest gift to the world. More than 2,000 years ago, the angel Gabriel appeared to Mary. He said, "Do not be afraid. You have found favor with God." The angel told her that she would give birth to a baby boy, Jesus, who would be called the Son of the Most High. 9 months later, Christ was born in the town of Bethlehem. The Son of God came into the world in a humble stable. As Christians everywhere know, the birth of our Lord and Savior changed history forever. At Christmas, we give thanks to God and that God sent His only Son to die for us and to offer everlasting peace to all humanity. More than 2 millennia after the birth of Jesus Christ, His teachings continue to inspire and uplift billions and billions of people all over the globe. His divine word still fills our hearts with hope and faith, and Christians everywhere still strive to live by Jesus' timeless commandment to His disciples, love one another. Above all, during the sacred season, our souls are full of thanks and praise for Almighty God for sending us Christ, His Son, to redeem the world. Tonight, we ask that God will continue to bless this nation, and we pray that He will grant every American family a Christmas season full of joy, hope, and peace. On behalf of Melania and the entire Trump family, Merry Christmas to all, and best wishes for a very, very great and happy New Year. Thank you.
Sandy Rios with you this morning. That was the president. He and Melania were standing up on the side of the White House that has those long stairs that sweep down on either side, and that's where the musicians were. And I just wanted you to hear that. That is your president, and certainly no one made him do that. He wasn't doing that for, you know, to get the support of the evangelicals, which is what our Never Trump Christians tell us, that he's just trying to curry our favor. Let me just kind of put this in context. Do you remember that in the last few years, we have not been able to, not during the Trump administration, but one of the things he campaigned on was that we were going to say Merry Christmas again. Sounds so simple, but it's free speech. It's expression of faith. It's no longer denying that this country was founded on Christian principles, that our founding fathers were deeply serious Christians. Not all of them, but almost all of them, and that the things that they formed, the government that they found was done through prayer and sweat. It's just amazing. And so President Trump wanted to reinstate that truth, and he has done that faithfully. You may remember that his predecessor said that we were no longer a Christian nation. Do you remember him saying that? We're Buddhist, we're atheists, we're all of these things. We're Muslim, but we are not. We are no longer a Christian nation. So I wanted you to hear that, and I wanted you to just relish this moment, because at this Christmas, of 2020. We are very much a Christian nation. Christians are rising up. They're praying, pouring their hearts out to God. I don't know if God's going to hear our prayers to save this country. I encouraged you, and I am also still praying. Absolutely. Because God has made it clear, you know, that if my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and heal their land. And so we're asking God to heal our land. We are at a precipice. There's no question about it. But God is on his throne, and I am really thrilled to know that I believe that President Donald Trump and his wife Melania both really do understand that. And that gives me comfort as they, if they have to leave the White House, and if they are, which I believe they will be, the attempt will be me to completely destroy their lives in every way. Financially, they will be hounded the rest of their lives. That's what they'll do. That's what the left does. But it comforts me to know that I believe, know Jesus now. I do. I'm not saying Trump's going to be an evangelist, and sometimes people make these decisions and then it doesn't stick. That's also possible. Only time tells. You know, that's the whole parable of the wheat and the tares. We don't know how people are going to respond to the message, but at this point, it seems that they certainly do understand and that their faith has grown deeper, probably accelerated during these very difficult times. All right, so you know that the Supreme Court refused the case that was filed from Texas to not pay attention to the election results of four different states who had changed their election process illegally through other actors besides the duly elected members of their legislatures, which is unconstitutional. But the Supreme Court refused to hear it, and they basically said Texas has not demonstrated a judicially cognizable interest in the manner in which another state conducts its elections. All of their pending motions are dismissed as moot. Justice Samuel Alito issued a separate statement to say he would have granted Texas' request to sue, but not the preliminary injunction, as he believes the Supreme Court is obligated to take up any case that falls within its original jurisdiction, meaning that the court has the power to hear a case for the first time as opposed to reviewing a lower court's decision. Justice Clarence Thomas joined Alito in this statement. All right, so, of course, there were 18 different states' Republican attorneys general who joined. There were 116 now congressmen who joined. And so here's the problem. If Texas has no standing, then how are we to remain a united states? If we cannot claim, any of us as states or other members, that in a national election other states can cheat, and can let down their election laws, can allow ballots cast by dead people, by people that don't live in that state, by illegal immigrants, then if we don't have standing as citizens of this country to challenge the states who were faithless to their citizens and to the rest of us, then who does? And is there a United States left? It is a very good point to ask. And if this is not the purview of the Supreme Court, then what is? To sort this problem out, and if it's not their job to do it, then whose job is it? I don't care. I know the legal minds. I run with them. I know how they think, because they'll say, well, that was a long shot. That was ridiculous. That's never been done before. And I would say, because I know enough about the law to say this, it is a matter of interpretation. And to the plain listener, and that's what I am, it makes no sense whatsoever that the Supreme Court refused to hear this. To me, it made perfect sense. And I think they're afraid. They're just afraid. They are afraid. They're going to be rejected by other great legal minds. They're playing to their own kind. They want to make sure that they have the approval of other attorneys. What they don't understand, I don't think they get this. That if they allow this election to stand, this fraud, if they allow it to stand, and if the Republicans lose in Georgia, and if they don't lose in Georgia, it's just a matter of time, they will lose it maybe midterm, because the elections will never be fair again. What makes anyone think that somehow the left would stop, you know, perpetrating this fraud on the American people? They've been doing it. Studies have shown for many years, and we just didn't know it. Lots of seats have been lost like this. So suddenly they're going to, you know, see the light. We're going to have fair elections. We are not. So the Supreme Court, I just want them to remember, I wish John Roberts was sitting across the table from me with a cup of coffee. I would say to him, Justice Roberts, do you realize that you just really signed your own, let's say, career death warrant, not literal, because your court will be stacked by leftists, and you, sir, will have no power at all. And you will be hated as though you loved President Trump. You will be smeared and tarred just because you tried to help will not gain you anything in this new world in which we're going to be living. Okay, I have lots to tell you, and I'm talking too much, so I want to go on. This is a huge story because there are lots of other things going on. Just let me put this in perspective for you. The Texas case was something that came up suddenly. Now, some of us had heard it was in the works, but generally speaking, people did not know about this. It came up on the horizon. And suddenly there was a lot of interest because it really was a great suit. Ken Starr had part in this, and I don't care what, you know, the other legal minds, oh, that's silly. It just depends on, you know, how you think about things. There is no definitive yes or right or wrong in the law, as you can see this. You'd think there would be, but really it is often a matter of personal opinion how this law is applied. Okay, so we have, though, and have had, all kinds of ongoing suits and efforts all across the country. So just because the Supreme Court did not take this is really, honestly, not the job of the court. This is the job of the legislatures. So let me see if I can quickly give you a little rundown of what's happening here. The Michigan, by the way, AG and Secretary of State have blocked the results of that forensic audit of the 22 Dominion machines in Antrim County. Do you remember that story? It was a local guy who was part of the election process that night who pointed out that, who discovered that machines had switched votes from one side to the other. And in terms of President Trump, it was all the votes went to Joe Biden and President Trump lost his votes. It was a definite switch, and they pointed out the problem and they switched it back. But like, how did that happen? And why are all of these switchings, you know, votes to this from this person to that person, why do they always, you know, help Joe Biden? Anybody think about this? Is that just an accident, right? It's just a, you know, computer mistake. It can't possibly be guided by some human. So Michigan, we have every reason to believe there's a lawsuit now trying to override that to make this public because people feel that that's enough reason right there to show this is a Dominion machine, that there is something really, really rotten. And so that is something that could actually overturn the election nationally. And also there's a, let's see, there is a provision of the Constitution that if the electors are presented to the U.S. Congress, and that would happen on January the 6th, it's not a done deal till January the 6th. These electors that are meeting today, by the way, we're going to be talking to one of them in just a second, they're meeting today, on January 6th, whatever is decided today will be presented to the Congress. So if just one member of the House and one member of the Senate object, there will be no vote. They will separate the two bodies will go back to their own chambers and deliberate for 2 hours, and then there will be some kind of a deliberation after that. So Senator Paul has not ruled out filing that objection. We have three congressmen, Mo Brooks, Barry Moore, who's just gotten elected out of Alabama, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's just been elected from Georgia. They are planning to file objections. So that's the next battle that will take place January 6th. No, it's not the next one, because the next one's happening today as the electors gather. And by the way, tens of thousands of people rallied in Washington on Saturday to demand election integrity. They were not put aside by the Supreme Court's decision. They came. There were fights that broke out in Washington State, fights that broke out in Washington, D.C. You know, people have been stabbed, not massively. I think most of the people that were in D.C. on Saturday were safe and let their voices be heard. Let me just say, this is not over. It is not over, and I want you to hear that clearly. Wisconsin has been a very interesting state in all of this because they've had a lot of the same election fraud that we've seen around the country, but they've been our silent partner. Well, no longer, because the chairman of the Waukesha Republican Party will join us next. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
Do you wish you could help end the violence and atrocity of abortion?
My mommy chose life because ICU Mobile was in our community.
Join us at ICU Mobile, the pioneer of mobile medical ministry. We go serve women, go save lives, and go share Christ right in the communities where abortion is happening at the greatest rates all across the country.
We needed help close to home when mommy didn't know how she'd make it with her pregnancy. ICU Mobile shares the gospel of Jesus Christ and shows mommies their babies, like me, every day.
Life-changing transformation happens in the communities that need us most. That's exactly why ICU Mobile chooses to go. 4 of 5 women in our mobile units see their ultrasound and choose life. Visit us now at icumobile.org to make a life-saving contribution. Or text LIVES to 45777. That's LIVES to 45777.
If you've fallen behind in your credit card payments during the shutdown, you're probably feeling some added pressures. And even a brief history of late payments can lead to a big drop in your credit score. But you don't have to solve these problems alone. Trinity Debt Management can help. We'll work with your creditors, put a stop to late fees and other penalties, and make a plan that helps you get caught up. We'll also consolidate your bills into one easy-to-manage monthly payment and negotiate much lower interest rates. Not only will you find immediate relief, you'll save thousands. And don't worry, it's not a loan. It's a smart way to get back on track. All you have to do is give Trinity a quick call, and we'll take care of the rest. Right now, no one really knows what the future will bring. But one thing is for sure. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Here's the number.
Call 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
When it comes to choosing a college, campus visits are important. But 2020 has made it tough to tour your top picks. At Liberty University, we understand, so we offer a variety of visiting opportunities. Tour campus from home with a virtual tour, or visit campus for a few hours for a daily campus tour. Dig a little deeper with Experience LU, a single-day event where you'll tour campus, meet with faculty and staff, and sample on-campus dining locations. Pick your perfect visit by texting VISIT to 49596. Again, that's VISIT to 49596.
Ciara Athos is an American patriot, a modern-day Betsy Ross. She's a 17-year-old student at Lewis and Clark High School in Spokane. When it was time for yearbook pictures, Ciara brought along an American flag. But school leaders told her Old Glory was a no-no. There's a new yearbook policy, no props allowed, and they considered the flag to be a prop. Television station KXYL got wind of the story. They interviewed Ciara. Her bedroom was decked out in the stars and stripes. So was the cover of her smartphone. Ciara says she was not trying to make a political statement. She just loves America. Ciara and her parents are hoping to meet with school leaders to discuss the policy. But she's already decided if she can't wear the red, white, and blue, she just won't be in the yearbook. You know, it's hard to believe, but some people actually think it's political to be a proud American. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The pace of articles and stories coming out about election fraud and systematic voter tampering is accelerating.
Outrage in Baldwin Park after a fire in an official ballot drop box.
I saw them as being safe and secure. But what happened last night, to me, was a terrorist act against democracy. The biggest fear is that residents or those who utilize this container were denied their First Amendment right to their vote.
What happened on October 21st was a series of unusual events that cannot be coincidence. I know I saw ballots with return addresses filled out, thousands of them, thousands, loaded onto my trailer in New York and headed for Pennsylvania.
Things that they're calling glitches in software that are randomly changing only certain votes, they're not glitches at all. Those are programmed into the software. It's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. If there's a problem in software, we call those bugs. If the bug is in the software, it does everything consistently with everything, not just selectively picking things. If only certain things are selected, picked, and changed, that's not a bug. That's designed in the software. That's intentional.
Well, this wasn't enough. In Antrim County, ballots were counted for Democrats that were meant for Republicans, causing a 6,000 vote swing against our candidates.
We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment to our country. We want the law to be used in a proper manner. So we'll be going to the...
of a video that American Family Association Action has produced to kind of lay out what the problem is and make it really clear to people. And we are asking you to contact your state legislators because they are the only ones that can fix this right now. The electors are meeting today, and what we are asking is for them to select an alternate slate of electors that will be prepared when the U.S. Congress it finally gets to that point. It probably will. When they decide what electors to accept, they will have a slate of Trump electors ready at the time. And so we want you to go to afaaction.net, afaaction.net. It will explain it more thoroughly. You can see that video and you can take the action that we're asking you to do. All right, so we've heard from all kinds of states, but not really from Wisconsin. And I've asked Terry Dittrich to join us this morning. He is the GOP chair of Waukesha County. Waukesha is the largest county in the state of Wisconsin. It is an absolutely beautiful place. I've been there many, many times, lots of churches, and they are really central to the fight in Wisconsin. So Terry has joined us this morning. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you?
Very, very good. Thank you. There's so much to say about Wisconsin, Terry. Could you just, in a thumbnail sketch, tell us, well, first of all, you had a hearing last week, and was there
Yes.
good evidence presented? Can you give us an idea of what kinds of things actually happened in Wisconsin?
I believe so. The hearing up at the State Assembly was just kind of a dovetail on a lot of evidence that's been presented by the Trump team over the last 2 weeks. So it was just the average citizen around the state of Wisconsin coming in and expressing, how frustrated they are with the lack of transparency on a lot of these particular incidences that took place, which really back up the main contentions that the Trump team has about some wholesale voter fraud with regard to things like indefinitely confined and curing of ballots around the state. By the clerks themselves, other mover voter irregularities, and just a whole series of issues that have been front and center before the Wisconsin Election Commission, before our legislature, and obviously surfaced in our recount efforts that took place in Dane County and Milwaukee County, which were the two Democratic strongholds here in Wisconsin during the election. So it's really come to a head here. The state legislature decided to hold hearings. They did that for, at least 8 hours last Friday. And then subsequently, the state Supreme Court agreed to take the case, the Trump case, which they had previously rejected, 4-3. And obviously, that was contentious as well. And so we had oral arguments here in Wisconsin yesterday by the Supreme Court, and they're expecting a ruling coming up pretty quickly. They actually have till January 6th, but we think it'll happen earlier. So a big, big day here in Wisconsin with
yes.
the electors voting. There's a lot of things swirling around, and obviously we've got a Supreme Court justice who's proved unreliable so far, Brian Hagedorn, and we're hoping that he rules in our favor as we have a one-vote majority in the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I should just interject, Terry, in our private conversations. You have told me, and people will understand this because we've seen it front and center in our Supreme Court, that you've had a major disappointment with Brian Hagedorn, who's been a new appointee to the court that you thought. He was from Waukesha. He was supported
yes.
strongly by Christians there, and he has really stabbed you in the back now three times, right?
Yeah, it's been a very frustrating process. We honestly don't understand why. Brian is very much a process-oriented justice, as it seems, but as reality is, has shown, when it came down to looking at cleared evidence and making decisions to at least let the people of Wisconsin's voice be heard by really scrutinizing evidence in the past and up until recently here for the Trump case, he just seems to be AWOL. And so we are hoping that he's got one last chance here in the court decision here coming up, I would imagine, in the next couple of days. And hopefully he's going to rule with us. And in that case, then we get to present all the evidence truly to the American public and the Wisconsin public that is deserved.
Terry, explain again, if you did, I missed it, clearly what you're asking the Wisconsin Supreme Court to do.
Yeah, so 2 weeks ago or so, the case came before the Supreme Court, and by a 4-3 margin, with Brian Hagedorn dissenting, siding with the liberal judges, he and the court decided to send the case through the what they would call the normal process, which ultimately resulted in the case being referred to the circuit courts in Milwaukee and Dane, who then subsequently rejected the case. It actually went to an independent judge in Racine, I believe, another city in southeastern Wisconsin. He rejected the case, and therefore the appeal at this time took place late last week, and the appeal sending the case back directly to the Supreme Court again. So, frankly speaking, we felt that it should have been heard the first time, and here we are back in a circle. Unfortunately, we lost almost 2 weeks of time for the people of Wisconsin to see the evidence. It also held up the possibility of some open records requests for more additional information that will be very telling. And so therefore, on Friday, the case was back in the Supreme Court. They had oral arguments yesterday, and we're waiting to see what judgment that the court takes. But this has really been a long delay. It's been a very frustrating process, and now it's right back where it was 2 weeks ago anyway. So we'll see how the court rules, but it's absolutely critical.
Okay, back to your legislature, which, as we've said, you know this, and I said it before you joined us this morning, we are very disappointed, of course, that the Supreme Court rejected the Texas case, and I just don't think it makes sense. I do think the point has to be made that this is very critical to the country. And if the Supreme Court can't bother to make a decision on this, then who can? And so it is.
Exactly.
But it is finally, though, constitutionally, it is the legislatures and the U.S. Congress who are responsible to make this thing right. It has never been the courts. The courts have too much power because the legislatures have let them have that much power. So, has your legislature been stirred to action by these hearings, do you think?
I think so. I think they've been in the process over the weekend of really taking a good look at the evidence that was presented, even though they've seen evidence before. And I know a number of the legislators were down at the recounts to see how that process went, which was not good, even though the press reported that it was smooth and transparent. It simply was not. So they had a good chance to see that. So between the evidence presented on Friday and the rallies, protests, and public pushback that they've been receiving, believe me, they're front and center. They can't hide. They're really being pushed into action. I know that they see a number of the allegations, and I believe they're absolutely true, of fraudulent activity around the state. I know they believe that is more oriented towards legal requirements for action rather than legislative. At this point, with this critical time frame, but I think they've also gotten a very good look at the fact that our state statute for elections law in Wisconsin is severely flawed, and that was actually passed through by our legislature, and it needs to be addressed by our legislature. So I'm very confident that going forward, they are going to take some very significant action quickly and start the process to put revisions to our statute on the desk of Governor Evers. But for the short term here, they are being pressured heavily to act And I think they want to see today what happens with our electors, as you likely know, and maybe it's happening in other states, but I believe that in this state, the electors are going to be asked, the Republican electors are going to be asked to cast their ballots for President Trump and obviously send those to Congress so they're there in case they're, in the meantime there's any lawsuits, that our electors would be there, just as your description was just before I came on the show here today. So I think we're going to follow the same path as a number of other states, and the electors today, we're going to be watching it closely, but our Trump electors or Republican electors are going to go our way.
Terry, back to the press. And just, you know, Wisconsin, this is my view, for what it's worth. You know, I was in Chicago for years and did radio in Chicago for years and lots of ties in Wisconsin. My husband's father was from Wisconsin. I mean, just Wisconsin, I know it well, and I've told you that. But my impression of Wisconsin is that it is a unique state. I guess every state is, but unique in the sense that independent, very strong-minded. Wisconsinites are smart people. And they will not be, like, pushed around. They are kind of, they're stubborn Germans, I guess. You know, so, but once they latch, but once they latch on to something, you know, they really are independent. And then, of course, you've got the vortex of all the communist influence, and you have that out of Madison, and it's powerful. And you've got this battle between the communist left and the very strong right, which includes tons of Christians. I just wanted to paint the picture so that people understand what's happening in your state. And I was looking, Terry, before you joined me, I was looking for stories on what happened in the hearings on Friday, and probably about 10 stories came out, maybe six or seven. They were all negative. No evidence. This is ridiculous. It's a circus. NPR, you know, of Wisconsin. That's part of the battle, isn't it, to get the truth out to the people?
It really is. I mean, just down to the point where we have an open records request for the applications in Dane County and Milwaukee County, which we literally are fighting tooth and nail to get our hands on. The Democrats know that there is something there. The bottom line is the applications must be obtained so that we can see if they match up, the signatures match up with the ballots and the absentee ballot envelopes. And just that one particular is so disturbing that we can't get our hands on that. You know, they have an open records request, which essentially takes them out to 45, 60 days. It's actually supposed to be just expedient, so there's not a deadline on this. And we've been waiting that now for 2 weeks from Milwaukee Election Commission and the courts there. So the bottom line is there's trying to steamroll this through, and the press is completely compliant with them. I mean, every narrative is, well, this is just a big hoax. There's just a waste of time, and there's no credible evidence, et cetera. And you know, people of Wisconsin are smarter than that. They know that this has been taking place, not just in this election, but in past elections. They know our statute is like Swiss cheese, if they use a Wisconsin term. And the bottom line is it's just very, very frustrating to get that news out. In my opinion, I think we could have done better jobs in some cases as Republicans to try to push that out further. And the legislature is being looked on to do that because, frankly speaking, there's not free press in Wisconsin. I mean, it is just completely controlled by the narrative is controlled by Madison and the left. It's just very, very frustrating. So
yeah,
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, let me just say, also, Wisconsin has a very leftist governor, Tony Evers, but a Republican legislature, so it's an interesting mix. And I want to also say to all of you, if you go to afaaction.net, afaaction.net, you'll see that alert, State Legislators Fix the Fraud. And you'll see the video that we played earlier. You can share that with them. Do that now. Pass it to your friends in Wisconsin. Send it to them. And also tell them about this show. Ask them to download the app. Explain that to them so that people can listen everywhere. This is a source of information, as is AFR Talk in general. Terry Dietrich needs our prayers because he's on the front lines. He's the GOP chair, again, of Waukesha County in Wisconsin. Terry, God bless you and keep you safe and rested. And roll up your sleeves because here we go for another round.
We will, Sandy. God bless you, and thank you for having me on today. Take care.
Yeah, my pleasure. You too, sir. Okay, bye-bye. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
to sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. I'm host David Wheaton, inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, as we discuss all matters of life and faith from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on American Family Radio.
This week on Truth for Life, Alistair Begg concludes a study of God's faithfulness in affliction, delivering a special message about facing life's apparent trivialities, and brings a new series exploring Christmas in the beginning. Be sure to join us Monday through Friday on Truth for Life.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
And seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to see if he could find anything on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. From a distance, the fig leaves gave Jesus the impression that there was fruit on the tree. Upon closer inspection, the tree was fruitless. Perfect church attendance and ministry activity cannot replace actual Christ-like fruit produced in our lives. From a distance, it can appear as though we're bearing fruit, but what would we find with a closer look? Are we content with fruitful appearance, or do we yearn for the real thing?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. You may be in a situation in which you are under-resourced and outgunned. Well, God sent Gideon into battle against the Midianite army of 135,000 men when Gideon had just 32,000 men. He was outnumbered 4-1. Then God told him, "You have too many men for me to give you the victory." So Gideon sent 22,000 home who were scaredy cats and 10,000 who weren't good soldiers. And he was left with just 300 men. So Gideon's odds went from 4-1 against to 13-1 against to 450-1 against. God said, "Those are my kind of odds." And he gave Gideon an overwhelming victory. So if you're in a situation where you are hopelessly outmanned and all you have is God, God may be saying, "I have you right where I want you."
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Today, the Electoral College is expected to make a man deeply compromised by the Chinese Communist Party, the president-elect of the United States. When most Americans voted last fall, they were unaware of Joe Biden's exploitable family ties to CCP, business interests and operatives. That's because the media refused to report on hard evidence of this national security threat before the election, instead promoting false but deflecting narratives about Russian disinformation advanced by the candidate and his partisans. Now, news organizations are finally confirming that the Bidens have a serious China problem. Unfortunately, it seems so does his running mate, Kamala Harris, a radical leftist product of the same CCP-penetrated San Francisco political machine that has compromised Eric Swalwell, Dianne Feinstein, and Nancy Pelosi. Before a Biden or Harris administration is installed, we need clarity on how the Chinese Communist Party will benefit. This is Frank Gaffney.
Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
You went to bed and then this happened.
On election night, real-time coverage of vote totals and updates were handed down by data collectors such as Edison and sent to the various media companies. This is an entirely automated process with only a one-way interface on the side of those media companies to the sources. In the following video example, CNN experiences an on-camera switch in their reporting for the state of Pennsylvania. The county source is feeding live on television a count of 1,690,589 votes for Trump and 1,252,537 votes for Biden. The time is approximately 11:08, 28 seconds Eastern Standard. The next time Pennsylvania is shown on the screen, there are 1,670,631 votes for Trump and 1,272,495 votes for Biden. The time is approximately 11:09, 1 second Eastern Standard. Live on television, CNN demonstrated a 19,958 exact vote switch from candidate Trump to candidate Biden. This means Trump lost nearly 40,000 votes.
How did this happen?
So when you vote, you vote in a precinct, and a precinct of vote either goes to
all right,
an
that's
adjudication
a, I'm going to interrupt because
a
that's a long video, but I wanted you to hear the beginning of it. It's called Election Night Errors. And the question is, how did that happen? And how did Trump continue to lose votes? How does that happen? When they count votes, don't they just keep going up? How do votes disappear? And why did they only disappear for President Donald Trump? Well, that is actually posted by Conservative Treehouse. And we will put that on our Facebook page because I'd like for you to see that. But if you can't get it on my Facebook page, because you know how that goes, it's Election Night Errors. How do you get negative votes? Well, today the electors are casting their votes. And Ken Blackwell, who is the former Secretary of State for the state of Ohio and the former mayor of Cincinnati, he's on staff at FRC as a fellow. And there's so many things to say about Ken, but he is an elector for President Donald Trump. And he's on his way, I think, to meet with the Electoral College. Ken, thanks for joining us this morning.
Sandy, it's good to be with you.
So, Ken, can you tell us where you're going? I mean, where do you do this?
Well, I'm going to the State House, the Senate chambers, and I'm going at noontime cast my Electoral College vote for Donald Trump and then one for the Vice President, Mike Pence. Ohio got it right. It's a ceremonial process, but a very important process at a time when there is, I think, a constitutional crisis in the country. Just listening to that run of tape that you just played just dramatizes that, as Alice said in Alice in Wonderland, things are getting curiouser and curiouser. When you stop to think that every president who gained votes in a reelection campaign has also won reelection for the past 150 years, you know, President Trump gained 11 million votes from his 2016 race, but Biden somehow pulled off a miracle. Look, there are technical as well as administrative glitches that have to be addressed if we're to embrace the integrity of our election system in the country. As you just mentioned, there are a lot of unanswered questions. I think that this is going to be at least prosecuted through January the 6th. What I understand from the campaign is that in some of these battleground states today, there will be alternative slates that will be presented, and it is the campaign's hope that these alternative slates will be sent to Congress with the Biden candidates or electors, and that pushes it where it should be in the hands of the Congress to decide which one of the slates should be accepted. This is a long way from being over. I'm delighted that in Ohio there's not a lot of controversy. It was pretty clear-cut victory. But in some of these battleground states, you know, the battle goes on.
Ken, I just talked to Terry Dietrich, who's the GOP chairman of Waukesha County, Wisconsin. And Wisconsin is planning on filing this alternative slate of candidates. And I don't know. I know there was a concerted effort to get these states to do that. Do you know if we were successful in all of those states?
I think that there are at least three states. My understanding is that we have been successful in five states. Well, look, the president won 18 of 19 bellwether counties, which have a near-perfect record over the last 40 years. 18 of 19. And miraculously, Joe Biden wins. you know, Biden is set to become the first president, if the scam continues, first president in 60 years to lose Ohio and Florida on his way to election. Biden is set to become the second president in 168 years to lose Ohio, Florida, and Iowa. It's just not washing.
No, it isn't washing. I don't think, you know, honestly, Ken, I don't think even, I'll say the left, and then I'll also say Democrats, because I think there are some still just playing Democrats, not enough of them. I don't think they really believe that Joe Biden won. I really don't. There's a lot of bluster about it, and the media is trying to make us think it's a fait accompli. It actually happened, and any objection is nonsense, but I don't really think people are buying that. I just sense it among people. They're not as hostile and haughty or cocky as they should, as they would be, I think, if they really believed it, that he had won.
Well, you're probably right. And look, what we have to do is fight against this narrative of the mainstream media questioning the propriety of the procedures and the counts in these battleground states is somehow a threat to democracy. We're a constitutional republic, and I'm focused like a laser beam on Article 2 of the Constitution, which says that state legislatures, not courts, are the final authority to settle election disputes for the presidency. And that this just means that the framers of the Constitution understood that the representatives of the people have the final say in naming electors, and that's why these alternative slates will be sent to Congress, and then Congress can sort it out and do battle. But by no means should the president prematurely concede. The fight is continuing.
I'm a little confused about one thing, Ken, because look, we've fought against, you know, President-elect Joe Biden continuing to say he cannot say that. The electors haven't even been cast. He cannot claim that. Will that be true after today? If the electors cast their votes and he has 270, can he say he is rightfully the president-elect?
Not if, in fact, those alternative slates are sent to the archivist at the Library of Congress and then forwarded to the Congress. That means that this process is continuing and no one has a settled 270. That's why it's so important to make sure that those alternative slates are advanced. This is really in the hands of Republican leaders in these state legislatures. They cannot turn a blind eye to these irregularities, these transgressions of the Constitution. I mean, you just think about it. In Pennsylvania, Democrats in battleground counties had the right and were given the privilege of curing their ballots, and Republicans were not. What kind of nonsense is that? That cannot stand.
It cannot stand.
And the state legislature in Pennsylvania cannot let it stand.
Hey, I'm also confused about something else, Ken, because when that Ohio case, and you, I'm thinking you know everything, so I'm going to ask you this question about Pennsylvania. When the Supreme Court allegedly rejected that case that Kelly filed and his the other person, the other candidate for Congress, there was much, you know, preening about how the Supreme Court rejected the case, but Kelly said they did not really. They said they would not allow one part of it, which was not to certify electors. But do you know what's happened to the rest of that and where the Supreme Court is with that?
My understanding, and this is why I let the lawyers handle that, not being a lawyer, I'd stay on the administrative side. My understanding, again, is that the Supreme Court hasn't made a determination on any of these cases on the merits. They have, in fact, rejected these things on technicalities. And there are some folks who are basically saying that past the technicalities, the merits of this case is that these irregularities were substantial and the actual outcome of legal voters has not been determined. So, you know, it could be in a dark hole in the Supreme Court. But the reality is that is why, Sandy, we can't let this date of December the 14th be the final date. There are avenues to pursue, and we've just discussed for the past few minutes that one avenue, and that is for the state legislatures and Republicans in control of those state legislatures to do their job.
Yep. And by the way, let me just interject again, AFAaction.net, AFAaction.net, go there, and there is something you need to do today, and that is what Ken is talking about. It'll be right there at the top, and that's an action to connect to. Connect with your state legislatures and tell them to do their job. Ken, I described before you joined me, as best I can, the action that the United States Congress will take when the electors are sent there and they convene on January, whatever the date is, 14th or some, I'm not sure, 7th, I think. Rand Paul has not refused to rule out being the senator, if he has to be the only one, to refuse to accept those electors. And we already have three congressmen that are saying they will reject. And then my understanding is that the Senate separates from the House and they deliberate for 2 hours. But I'm not sure what happens after that. Do you know?
Well, this is uncharted. Again, it's into the fine-tuning of the law. But my understanding is that once this is contested, there is a like anything else, a give and take. There has to be a resolution. If there is not a resolution on January the 20th, some weird shuffling of chairs takes place. Nancy Pelosi assumes an office. Mike Pence assumes the office in transition while we continue to sort this out. Believe me, I don't think it's going to get to that. I think this is going to be solved in the first week of January. And let me underscore something, Sandy. The Republican Party in this country has to stop acting as if it is a minority party,
yes,
an insignificant player. We are the people of this country have made us the majority party in the country. We control more state legislatures. We control more governorships. We control the United States Senate. We radically reduce the gap between Democrats and Republicans in the House. The Republicans won all 27 of the 27 states that were considered to be toss-up states in this past election. We are not a minority party. We are the majority party. We represent the majority of Americans. We have to do our job.
Yes, absolutely. And so that's why we're asking you to go to AFAaction.net and sign. It'll give you an action how to contact your congressman or your legislator. State Legislators Fix the Fraud is the title of that. Ken, I do think, Lieslyn, you've made the point very well, and I keep saying that we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And it is the people that are going to make this happen. And your legislators are the closest to you. They are the most accountable. They're one of you. They don't go to Washington and get in remote offices and forget who they are. Your state legislators live with you. And they have the power to do what we're asking them to do. So, Ken Blackwell, thank you. Drive safely, and we'll be anxious to hear what happens today. Ken Blackwell, former Secretary of State of Ohio and an elector for President Donald Trump. Ken, thanks for joining us this morning. We so appreciate it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.